band is like so either open or closed with propagation that, I mean, altitude certainly makes a big difference, at least that I've noticed on 6 meters. But I'm just wondering maybe if some of the effects that Barry's really seeing is just that the way that that band opens and closes, that some the amount of gain that he's actually getting out of the 6 meter beam may not be making all that much difference. Is there anything to that, do you think? I would imagine you've used 6 meters quite a bit, too. Back to you, Vic. K2RIW, KC2QRQ.
Glenn, I think the biggest problem is I'm looking at static. It's probably coming from the same direction as the beacon. That's probably the biggest thing I'm seeing.
You're saying, Glenn, is that when 6 meters is closed and you're getting, let me pick a number, 180 decibels of free space loss, and then you compare it to when a sporadic E cloud comes along, and 6 meters is called the magic band because it's got almost every kind of propagation in the world, D layer, E layer, F1, F2, sporadic E, trans-equatorial, field-aligned anomaly, media scatter, moon bounce. It's got all of them. It's got almost every propagating mode in the world. It's part of the reason they call it the magic band. So when the band opens with a sporadic E cloud, the signal suddenly gets 80 decibels stronger, you know, from an S1 to 20 over 9, so to speak, is the change repeater. Yeah, as I was saying, the thing will go from an S1 to 25 or 30 dB over S9 when the band opens on a well-calibrated S-meter. So the propagation can change the signal strength by such huge numbers, you'll think the Yagi is not doing anything. But still, you'll recognize that when you're listening to a particular signal, like that beacon from Philadelphia, and you swish the antenna back and forth in azimuth, and you see that beautiful pattern, where the main lobe is, let me pick a number, 25 degrees, and the first side lobe is 16 and a half dB down, 17 dB down, like it should be for ideal tuning, and you got a real good front-to-back ratio, and you know the antenna is running nearly 100% efficiency because it runs ice cold and you put a kilowatt into it, so you are getting that pattern, you are getting that benefit. When the band opens, it seems like you don't need the benefit. But when it comes to a pileup, if there was a rare station down in Bermuda, and you wanted to get him, for instance, that extra gain would make the difference between you and your buddies that don't have that gain. So gain doesn't go away simply because propagation changes so drastically, as I see it, Glenn. Yep, no. Gain is always there. If you could see that antenna pattern, it would look like a cucumber coming off that antenna. It's directing all the antenna like a flashlight beam in one direction. And there are times when you will open the band with a very long Yagi that will not ordinarily be open. You want to talk to your buddy in Pittsburgh during a time that the propagation is kind of yucky. You want to talk to your buddy in Pittsburgh with that long Yagi and a kilowatt, you can definitely do it. Okay, John, I'm going to turn it over to you for the mailbag at this time. KC2WGB. Let's hope we get a reset on the machine. K2LIW on the deck net.
Motorbike. Now all my niggas
get
fucked. Overbike. I see the best yet.
Can you copy me over this thing?
Over
yet? Yes, right now I'm copying you over it. I think this particular guy is mobile. Let's hope he can keep up doing that. Right now you're doing it very nicely.
Okay, KC2QB. Getting an old phone here, and we've got a question. Here's the issue. Don't know the age of this hand, but he has a problem, again, with both a frequency counter and a dip meter. He wants to know how to prevent overcup repeaters.
Time out.
I heard every bit of that, John. We're just waiting for the machine to come back. when it comes to using a grid dip meter, what is the right distance from the circuit that you're testing where you're trying to measure the resonant frequency of that circuit? Believe it or not, there is no fixed distance. Even if you're always using the exact same coil and the exact same frequency and you're measuring a whole lot of circuits, there is no exact distance. Let me explain that one. If I'm testing...
Welcome to the L repeater 9914.
If I'm testing a very low Q circuit, in other words, something that's got a lot of loss to it, you have to couple very tightly. You have to bring the distance kind of small in order to find out what the resonant frequency is. If I'm testing an extremely high Q circuit, something that's got a good size to it, a very low loss inductor, very low loss capacitor, no equivalent resistance anywhere, so to speak, a very high Q circuit, then the distance you have to be in order to get an accurate reading is much, much greater. So the coupling mechanism is not only a function of what resonant frequency, what coil you're using, but what is the Q, in other words, the bandwidth. A very high Q circuit tends to have a very narrow bandwidth. You can tell fairly fast by doing the following. Start off real close, swish the frequency dial on the grid dip meter back and forth, and you'll recognize that the dip has a peculiar characteristic to it. In other words, as you turn the dial, you'll see a dip, and the dip will stay there for a while, and as you keep turning the dial, all of a sudden it jumps, as if the oscillator on your grid dip meter has suddenly jumped to a new frequency. When you see that jump phenomenon, you know that the coupling is much too close. In that particular case, you're going to keep backing away until you can just barely see the dip. When you can just barely see the dip, usually it's the most accurate measurement you're going to get. So believe it or not, you keep backing away until you can just barely find that dip. And when in doubt, you go an extra 5 feet and make sure that it isn't just the normal characteristic of the grid dip meter, that as you tune to a higher or lower frequency, the amount of deflection of the meter does change. So the dip has got its own characteristics. So you try to maximize the distance where you can still barely see the dip. Now, the magic you got to do beyond that is have the coupling pickup for your
repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Once you find the maximum, once you find the maximum distance at which you can still... Once you find the maximum distance in which you can just barely see out of the dip, then getting enough coupling into the frequency counter with that frequency counter coupling mechanism disturbing the grid dip meter. Once you backed away a can with a good dip meter. And you can just barely see the... You can just barely see the dip on the meter. Then you've got to hope you've got enough of a sensitivity of the counter so that the frequency counter does. You have to hope your frequency counter has enough activity. You have to hope your frequency. Thank you. Hello.
Goodbye.
Hello.
Bye.
So I think you see.
Bye-bye.
There are various ways.
Bye-bye.
And take some experimenting. There is a learning curve to getting maximum performance. There's a learning curve to getting maximum performance. And you have to just keep working at it. By the way, hold up a Grissom meter. A Grissom meter is a poor man's equivalent of a vector network. A vector analyzer. None of these properties, none of these problems, so to speak. A vector network analyzer does have the equivalent of a transmitter and a receiver, which as it sweeps in frequency, it tells you the exact resistive component, the active component, tells you the nature. It tells you the but for the time there were very few, to my knowledge, very few ham radio equipment, grid disk, meters that can be used as a network analyzer. A network analyzer. Right now, this is expensive. You're bidding on it, John. As I remember, you say that you're trying to get a network analyzer to a particular frequency region, and therefore a bit expensive. It's just a matter of time before MFJ or something comes out with a very nice vector network analyzer. Is affordable. Let me pass it back to
looks like I've got a way of getting through. So, John, I'll repeat what I just said, and that is the good dip meter is really a poor man's equivalent of a vector network analyzer. It's just a matter of time, in my opinion, before somebody like MFJ comes out with a fairly inexpensive one. There isn't that much expensive hardware inside of a vector network analyzer, VNA. It really is just some sampling diodes, a frequency synthesizer, and that's a little bit on the expensive side. Only because we demand that it have extremely high frequency accuracy. That could, in some cases, be a free-running oscillator, the oscillator inside of a VNA. And the sampling diodes themselves, with modern-day equipment, are not super expensive. It's in order to make them sample for very brief periods of time, a picosecond. There are fairly simple circuits that can do that. And the software that runs the VNA, that doesn't have to be very expensive. So if we hang in there, we amateurs, I'm reasonably sure we'll have a VNA at amateur prices, like $500. Right now, my guess is it's hard to buy a good VNA that goes to, let's say, for instance, 4 gigs without spending numbers like $25,000. Is that approximately true, John? K2WGB, K2LIW.
That to be reliable. Yes, you'll get all kinds of erroneous readings. The closer you go in, you wind up shooting the counter on. And I just bring the little close enough to close the I go over directly on the always the way to go. Follow those simple rules. The least amount of signal you need to get your instrument to work, I think, is the best way to go, whether it be a grid dip meter or a frequency counter. KC2WJ and KC2WGB. If you could couple the UHF in, I know Lou does it all the time. If you could do that, it would help us.
It's going to take a moment.
Okay, thank you, Eric. That'll help, Dick.
All right, Roger that. But you had exactly the right idea. To couple as loosely as possible on...
Not found.
K2LAW testing. K2LAW testing. Okay. What you were saying, John, makes a lot of sense. It is a learning curve to getting the maximum performance out of a good jet meter. Coupling as loose as possible to the circuit you care about, and also coupling as loose as possible to the frequency counter. The presence of the antenna or whatever the probe that picks up the signal that's read by the frequency counter, that in itself can disturb the frequency. Let me think about that. Yes. Now that is another disturbing technique. It's too bad that most of the frequency counters don't have an auxiliary input connector on the grid dip meter. If you and I were designing a grid dip meter today, John, we would put an extra BNC connector out the side so that directly off the oscillator through a 1K resistor, so to speak, we are sniffing and sampling a little bit of the signal out of its oscillator into the frequency counter. And therefore, we'd know the coupling code.
You are currently connected to reflector 9126.
Meter would behave as usual, as if you weren't connecting to the frequency counter. Now, rarely does a person have to know the exact frequency. In other words, if I'm lining up a coil for, let me pick a number, 10.7 megacycle IF, and if a grid dip meter says it's somewhere between 10 and 11 megacycles, that really is, in many cases, as much as you really want to get out of the grid dip meter. You know if the circuit is working, and you know it resonates in the approximate frequency region. To know that it oscillates, that the grid dip meter is telling you that the frequency of oscillation or resonance is 10.71 instead of 10.70, you don't really use a grid dip meter for that kind of accuracy. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
I'm the only one who's been here.
first letter to you, and I did. You can have me the question again. I'll read that you submitted, and we'll try to get that through into the federal system as we're going along with this law. Don't lose hope. This rapid.
My QTH. Yeah, I can tell that the distance is much greater from the repeater and much closer to me. Because I'm, I take him 60 over 9, and I can easily overpower him. So, to repeat what the, to repeat what John just said, let's boost the level.
Thank you. KQRIW testing. Yeah, during much of that I was getting 60 over 9 at my QTH. The person who asked that question, you will get an answer. It'll just be a little bit more delayed, is what John was saying, is that you're allowed to resubmit the question. We tried answering it with reference to minimum distance between the grid dip us and the circuit that you're measuring. So that person will get an answer. You could go on to the next one. Particularly when you come through with the other one.
Jake, looks like we lost Jeff Link.
Oh, I see. All right. So, the eastern one.
Almost recommend
study the problem, yes, but I don't think it's doable. The oscilloscope function of a service monitor can either display the audio waveform, the PL tone. It can display the PL tone for you. It can display the modulation. It can display a spectrum analyzer display. That's what the oscilloscope function on a service monitor does. And so to homebrew a spectrum analyzer, to homebrew those receiver coupling circuits and transmitter coupling circuits. See, the service monitor has got a dummy load. If you're testing a 50-watt repeater, for instance, the repeater output goes into the 50-watt dummy load inside of the service monitor. A directional coupler samples a little bit of that signal and makes measurements as to what is it pop.
Dick, I gave you the wrong information. Let me correct that.
Go right ahead. So it wasn't service monitor. He's got an oscilloscope, and what does he want to build with it, John? Go ahead.
He wants to take a modulation monitor out of it. Without going into the room, how could he do that?
Now, when you say modulation monitor, do you think you're talking about a FM deviation modulation monitor or measuring the PL tone? When you said modulation monitor, would it be for sideband or FM modulation? What's your guess on that one, John? Go ahead.
Be able to look at his either the butterfly pattern or the triangle.
Okay, that's a lot easier. Let me see if I can get through on the other one. Teacher, RIW testing. Oh, well, it looks like I the tick of a coil or coupling capacitor or whatever to pick up the RF output of the transmitter and put it into the vertical plates of the scope, that's the easy part. You now want to make the horizontal deflection of the oscilloscope caused by the audio. And so I think you're starting to tell me a method by which you could get audio coupling to get a sample of the audio signal from the microphone circuit into the horizontal function of the oscilloscope. That's the hard part. That's the slightly more difficult part that's going to require a little more study of the rig as I see it. Now, maybe you've got a simpler way, and run that by again, John. KC2WGB, K2LAW.
Could he take a terminator board from an old unit and build that into, say, the directional coupler and put a port on that the audio offset wavelength? The RF is no coupling, but could he do that with a little discriminator board?
When you say discriminator board, tell me what you mean by that. Now, discriminator usually is something that's part of a FM modulation, and very few people build a modulation monitor by oscilloscope for FM. For sideband, yes. So how is the discriminator board picking up the sideband audio? And the sideband audio you pick up has to be, let me think about this, yes, it's got to be independent of the RF display. If I just took, if I rectified the audio of the RF and present that to the horizontal plate and display the RF directly on the vertical plate, that display may look nice, but it's going to give you a, what's the word for it, an optimistic performance. The performance will, you might have a non-linearity, you might have flat topping or whatever, which might not show up in that environment. Yeah, the flat topping wouldn't show up with that method. You literally have to talk, you have to sample the audio before it goes into the sideband modulator. That audio, the so-called pure audio, before it gets any distortion of the sideband product detector or product modulator, the vector modulator function, you've got to pick up that audio before there to where the display on the horizontal plates of the scope in order to get a realistic assessment of what your quality of modulation is. Run that by again, John, on the discriminator board. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
WGB. Well, the only thing I was thinking of, take an old radio and take its IF and discriminator board, that little assembly out, and build that to pick off the audio and supply that to the horizontal plate. Otherwise, if it's any more involved than that, he's definitely going to have to go inside the radio to get the audio that he's going to drive that. But I thought something like that might work.
It's going to give you a kind of a butterfly display, but the butterfly display could be optimistic. Let's assume you've got a rig that is going into flat topping. You're overdriving it, which really means beyond a certain amount of audio, the RF output is no longer increasing. And your discriminator board picking off the exact same audio, it also will not continue to increase. So therefore, flat topping on a butterfly display would be shown as a triangle waveform that on the far right-hand side and or far left-hand side suddenly shows flat topping. In other words, the horizontal deflection continues to occur, but the vertical deflection is no longer increasing. That's what a good modulation monitor would show you. But if you're picking off the RF audio from the same RF that you're displaying on the vertical plate, now when you hit flat topping and the RF doesn't increase, the discriminated output of that RF will also not increase. Therefore, you won't see that flat topping section as the extension on the right-hand side of the scope. The only clue you will get that you're getting flat topping is that the right-hand side, where you're now dwelling longer, will show a brightness increase, but it will not display the flat topping itself. So you really got to see the audio before it goes into the RF circuitry. That audio, that early pickoff of the audio, has to go to the horizontal plate. That's the way I see it, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
K2GJE, comment.
Okay, John first, and then we'll go over to Vito in that order. Go ahead, John.
Okay, so he is probably going to have to go into like the second mic amp and get his audio there. That's the only place he's going to have enough stage gain to be able to make that work. And you could, that might be a little difficult from what I understand he's trying to do here. But okay, let's see what Leo has to say. Back to you, Dick.
I'm wrong. It's K2GJE. That's who it is. That's Ed in Bohemia. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. You have to use a two-tone test oscillator with the two frequencies not harmonically related, like 60 cycles and 1,000 cycles. Use that same audio that you're modulating the rig with for the scope, and you could take the RF and the sub oscilloscopes. There's a pair of links on the back. It go right onto the plates. Over.
Boy, am I glad Ed checked in. There's two things that I was missing. Number one, the audio that you're testing for modulation monitor. Here I am assuming that the audio is coming from the microphone and the guy's trying to find out is his voice coming through the rig correctly. If you're generating an audio tone external to the rig and you've got a way of coupling it into the microphone circuit, either acoustically or electronically, now the audio of your external audio oscillator, a sample of it, can go to the horizontal function of the oscilloscope, and the RF that you snipped goes to the vertical. Now you will really see, at least for that audio oscillator, how linear the rig is. You're not using your real speech to do it. That's one approach. Now, what Ed was talking about, the so-called two-tone test, that's a test of intermodulation distortion, where you put in two tones, two audio frequencies that are not harmonically... that are not harmonically related, and now you look for the two tones coming out on a spectrum analyzer. There's the problem, Ed. The guy that wrote the question to John has an oscilloscope. He wants to make a modulation monitor out of it, and I don't think he owns a spectrum analyzer yet. The two-tone test, you display the output on a spectrum analyzer. I don't know that they display the two-tone test on a modulation monitor, although maybe you could. You've probably done this, Ed, so give me a little bit more words as to how you do that. K2GJE in Bohemia, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Just with an ordinary oscilloscope, if the scope can handle 14 megacycles, all well and good. If it can't, go right onto the vertical plates. Some scopes have links on the back where you disconnect the link so that the plates are not driven by the vertical amplifier, where they can be driven. They're DC coupled. There's some capacitors there. They're not DC coupled, so you're not going to get a high voltage feedback. Go right onto the vertical plates with your RF, or go right into the scope if it can handle that frequency, and then use your two-tone test oscillator on the input, and also use that audio into the horizontal of the scope, which it definitely can handle 1,000 cycles chopped with 60 cycles. And all you need is a regular oscilloscope, and that'll show you linearity of your amplifier. Over, back to net.
To my knowledge, Ed, whenever a person does a two-tone test on a single sideband transmitter, looking at it with a spectrum analyzer, he can look at three things on that spectrum analyzer screen, four or five things on the carrier. He can look at carrier ejection. He can look at each one of the tones creating a particular vertical blip somewhere on that screen of the spectrum analyzer. And if the rig is perfectly linear, if, for instance, his two tones are 3 kc and 0.7 kc, then 0.7 kc to the right of the carrier and 3 kc to the right of the carrier on the spectrum analyzer, he'll see a vertical blip. And if there is no intermodulation distortion, he sees no other blips on the screen. And the other blips will always be there. And if they're 30 dB down, you're in spec, and if they're only 20 dB down, you try to make it better. That's with a spectrum analyzer. If I'm now just looking at pure vertical RF modulation on a oscilloscope, which is not a spectrum analyzer, I can see doing it with one tone. I'm wondering what is the advantage in that case of using two tones. Why would you use two tones into an oscilloscope which is not a spectrum analyzer? Back to you on that one, Ed. K2GJE, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Sorry, Vic, did you call me?
No, I'm calling Ed, K2GJE, who we're talking to right now. Go ahead, Ed.
You won't get the bow tie pattern without a two-tone input. All you're going to do is turn on some RF with one tone. I've just given you some ideas. Most people don't have a spectrum analyzer on the shelf. Also, you can look at linearity. If you just want to look at an amplifier, you could look at linearity by detecting some of the RF input, detecting some of the RF output, put it on opposite plates, and if you get a straight line, which will be on an angle, but if you get a straight line with no bow in it, the amplifier usually is linear, over.
I'm very glad you're sticking in there, Red, and you're straight.
Hey, are you calling us long in, or are you just meeting individual stations? I'm having a coffee break.
Very glad you straightened me out on this one, Ed. You're absolutely right. One single tone into a single sideband transmitter gives you an absolutely steady carrier. I should have...
Lakeville and New Hampshire Road, there's a big shopping center called Lake Success Center.
I should have realized that. I'm going to come through the other input. As I see it, you're absolutely right. One single audio tone into a sideband transmitter gives you an absolutely steady... what looks like carrier, it's really a sideband output, but it's got no amplitude modulation to it. You only get amplitude modulation when there are two tones beating against each other, when the two tones are absolutely equal in amplitude, and hopefully they should be non-harmonically related. You're absolutely right. And so what you're saying is that now the two tones will give you a butterfly display onto an oscilloscope. Very nicely done. And the linearity of that butterfly, the straight lines of the triangle, so to speak, tells you the linearity. And I guess you will display the flat topping, yes, if you overdrive it. The only slight catch now is that once a person does the two-tone test into his modulation monitor, and he's got the butterfly test, he's got to, by some magic, make sure that the audio coming out of his mic, out of his mouth into the microphone, is approximately the same audio amplitude. And I guess with the right kind of a speech processor, that can be done. So, have you personally, Ed, done a two-tone test into a oscilloscope and gotten that butterfly test? K2GJE, K2RIW.